What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
The following content is brought to you by The Wall Street Journal.
Equally, broadband providers shouldn't be able to decide which websites to block or to slow down. Let's look at an example. I pay for cable and internet through a service provider, so when I go online, I expect to be able to watch all the goat videos my heart desires. And when I go on Netflix, I expect to be able to binge House of Cards without any interruptions in service. But without net neutrality, there's nothing stopping my service provider from simply blocking websites or slowing down the streaming speeds of websites, like Netflix. And it's already happened. In 2007, Verizon blocked text messages from a pro-choice abortion rights group. Verizon said they had the right to prevent consumers' access to any groups the company might deem controversial or unsavory, though they quickly backtracked. And just last year, Comcast slowed Netflix's streaming speeds until Netflix paid for smoother streaming. Netflix accounts for more than 30% of internet streaming, and Comcast believed that they should be accountable for some of the infrastructure upgrade costs. In February, when Netflix paid up, speeds went back up, as you can see here in the red line. Here's an analogy. Let's say FedEx wants Amazon to give them money because Amazon packages take up a large portion of their shipments, and FedEx thinks that they should chip in for their truck repairs. To pressure Amazon, FedEx slows down their delivery time, but the consumer is the one who paid for the two-day shipping in the first place, and the consumer is the one hurt by having her packages delayed. The FCC wants to establish clear rules to make sure that broadband providers can't do this. They plan to define the internet providers as common carriers under Title II of the Communications Act. Companies regulated under Title II can't discriminate what services they're providing to the consumer. It's why FedEx can't discriminate against Amazon deliveries. Democrats and President Obama strongly support these regulations. Many Republicans in the broadband industry see it as more unnecessary government oversight. They worry the regulations will prevent innovation and growth. The thinking goes, if AT&T and Comcast are required to let anyone use their lines for free, why would they spend billions of dollars building them in the first place? They also see the free market as a solution. If you don't like Comcast slowing your Netflix, switch to Verizon. The sticking point there is the majority of American consumers currently only have one provider of high-speed internet service to choose from. The debate will likely continue after the FCC rules on this February 26th.
We're back with you, and thank you for again joining us on our podcast. I'm Larry Rifkin. Along with me, of course, my trusty producer, sidekick, engineer, John Krofcik. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you doing?
Do you have that microphone where you need it?
I'm pointing it toward you.
Oh, my goodness. Do I need two microphones?
No, that's all right.
I see that in certain news conferences where they've got about 12 different microphones just to make sure. Well, John, I've got to ask a very personal question. Have you cut the cord?
Yes. Yes, I have.
And how did you do it?
How did I do it? Well, I've always had this, and it drives my wife and kids crazy, but paying for TV has always been
a sore spot. Yes. It rankled you. Why am I paying for something I used to get for free?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, there's something.
Well, that bothered me too about radio when I bought Sirius XM. And I said,
that's another one that
I know, but
me.
I'll tell you, some reasons are appropriate. I mean, it's a really good service, I've got to admit. Well, but I mean, you weren't getting enough value, you feel, from cable television?
I felt that when I had problems, that the provider didn't care about what I said. They wouldn't come on time. You know, you'd have to wait all day. It was just, and in the back of my mind, I've always said to just paying for TV, it just seems plain.
But how do you do it now? I mean, you do have entertainment options.
I do.
How do you do it?
I got a TV antenna.
Now, very few people are doing that.
But, and I got a Sling TV.
Now, what is Sling TV?
Sling TV is basically, it's owned by Dish Network. And it gives me TBS, UAM. It gives me basically everything you get.
On a basic cable package.
On a basic cable for about $30 a month.
Oh, wow. Now, but you don't get HBO.
I can. That's
extra.
That's okay. Extra.
What about Netflix?
I have Netflix, yes.
Okay, and that's another, what, $8 or $9
a
month?
I think $9 or $10.
Yeah,
I think,
okay, yeah. So you get a lot.
Yeah.
Regardless, he's not on cable per se, but he's got an alternative path to entertainment. Well, you know, I still have the cable bundle, I'll admit it. And one of the things that keeps me there is the high-speed internet. Now,
yes.
John, to tell everybody, you were at my house recently because I was asked, and I was really honored to be asked by the Harry Chapin Foundation to do a Facebook Live event. And John and I were fretting because they wanted us to be on Ethernet, but we stayed on Wi-Fi. And we were a little worried because this was a wild experiment we were involved
with. It was.
Right? It really was. Doing an almost all-day Facebook Live event.
Live, yeah.
But, John, you came into my house and you looked. Now, I don't even know how to measure this.
You have incredibly fast speed. You are paying for, I think, the top speed you can get in Prospect without being next to the
in our town
itself.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm really cranking out So I'm on the HOV lane on the internet because you told me that. I had no idea. But a lot of people really need to have high speed today, John, because they die if they don't have it. Everybody's transacting their business online,
absolutely,
their banking. So it really is such an important thing. And we've had this big debate going on lately about net neutrality. And a lot of people glaze over when they think about it. In the simplest sense, how would you define that?
Well, net neutrality basically says that every packet, no matter where it's from, it's got to be treated the same. You can't slow it down. You can't speed it up. So if you're sending an email or you're looking at video, it's the same as me sending a video an email. I mean, everything is treated equally.
Okay, so if Netflix wanted to speed everything up, and they were willing to pay the very few providers, the Verizons, the Comcast, and so forth, then they would, under something other than net neutrality, be able to work out a deal and then charge us more for their service because they're paying the internet service provider for that.
Tell you what happened with Netflix. Netflix had a problem with Verizon. Verizon didn't like Netflix when they came out. And I think this is how the net neutrality actually came about. So Verizon would slow down Netflix in order to, you know, people aren't going to watch it, right? They stop, start, you know, who's going to watch it? They purposely slowed it down because Verizon wanted you to watch their programming. I mean, they don't want you watching this alternative programming. And that's, I think, basically that was the time that this really got everybody up in arms because, you know, how dare you, you know, slow me down?
Yeah, to watch your movies or your shows or
you
whatever.
Know, so.
But now, John, net neutrality has been swept away by the new Trump FCC. And I just want to pose the argument. I mean, they're telling us that this will allow for more players to get into the internet provider space and allow for more market innovations and the way that the internet is provided for in terms of using satellite systems or new technologies. And they say it will not be a disincentive for small startups who can't compete now with the big guys, Netflix and Facebook. What do you say?
I think somebody's going to pay for it. I mean, they're going to pay. They want to be on the superhighway. You're going to pay for it, and everybody else, you know, you're going to be stuck with whatever you're stuck with, you know. So
now, are we talking primarily here about video? Because we, for example, are talking to people by way of the internet using audio.
Video is the big bandwidth hog.
Okay, so this won't affect a lot of podcasting, for example.
No, it shouldn't affect podcasting or email or anything like that. We're basically, this is video, this is high def video. People, you know, Netflix does high def video and stuff. And if you want to get it, you know, it's available to you. But this is where somebody's going to pay for, you know, in order to get this innovation, they have to spend money, right? And everything costs something. So I don't know. It's hard to say where now who's going to pay and where it's going to go.
But, John, could this lead us to more internet providers? Because right now, for example, with Comcast, and that's the service I have, and Comcast owns NBC. Now, if I was to think about it, where they're speeding things up or slowing things down, and Comcast being the largest cable provider and internet service as they are, they could slow down Fox News. They could slow down CNN because they own MSNBC.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Now, what happens? Is there an outcry from the viewers?
I think that's what happens. I mean, we saw that when Comcast and YES couldn't get along and nobody could see the Yankee games, you know, so there was a big
outcry.
In
this region.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, I think that probably is our only protection that we sort of have if enough people get pissed off at these companies. And
so you think that's the real safeguard in all of this?
Yeah,
well, I'll tell you again, this is another one of these complex, knotty issues, not easily left to a description of, you know, one sentence or, you know, 5-minute newscast. So that's why we're devoting about 30 minutes to it. And we've got a great provider of an understanding of this, Rich Hanley. Now, he's an old friend of mine. He's a professor of journalism at Quinnipiac University in Connecticut. He follows this stuff really incredibly well. And he also opines on these other decisions, John, that the FCC has made recently where they're saying, let's open things up. Let's not limit ownership of cross-media in a market. They're doing a lot of things. So we start off by asking Rich about the general tone of what's going on at the Federal Communications Commission. And then quickly, we get right into this issue of net neutrality, an important one for all of us, even if we don't even understand what it means. But I think you will after this.
Well, we've seen what happens with radio stations, though, when we open things up. And, you know, we got all the big guys owning all the radio stations now, and everybody's on the satellite. So I don't know. Time will tell us how this ruling will go.
Well, some of these conglomerates in radio, at least, have been having a hard time themselves as that medium has been changing so dramatically. And a lot of you are now turning for your radio to us, people like us who are podcasting. And you're saying, I don't really need a radio per se because I'm developing my own choices. And we certainly want to see the internet available for everybody who wants to innovate on it. So let's talk to Rich Hanley, see what he has to say.
There you go.
On the line with us is Richard Hanley. He is a professor of journalism at Quinnipiac University in Connecticut. And Rich, thank you very much for joining us here on America Trends.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
Well, the FCC, we know that they just made a big play as it relates to net neutrality. They've been doing other things, too, much along party lines, repealing a 40-year-old rule preventing a media company from owning a radio or television station and a newspaper, and from owning multiple TV stations in the same market. And there's a lot that they've been doing of late. What should we look at this direction of the FCC as being?
Well, this is classic Republican policy or ideology, you know, toward freeing the markets as much as markets can be free without any encumbrances from federal regulation or federal law. You know, in the media sphere, the government had always, and through the people, and the government had always saw it as somewhat different from other businesses because spectrum was limited in terms of broadcasting and in terms of radio, and that if one company accumulated too much power in one market, it would serve to stifle free speech. And it seems that that sort of guiding principle, which has been in place since the 1930s and it modified over time, is now being dismantled regulation by regulation, you know, by the FCC, you know, in terms of ownership rules, as you referenced, so that you can own a TV station, a radio station, a newspaper in the same market. So one voice, three platforms, plus your internet presence. You know, that's a major, major decision that didn't get enough coverage as it should, because it allows some of these big companies to come into given markets and dominate the information flow. the rationale on the Republican side is that with the internet, no one entity can dominate. And that's not necessarily true, because television and radio and newspapers are still powerful and potent forces, you know, in information dissemination. And so you look at the FCC, it's just following Republican principle to deregulate, deregulate, deregulate. And in the process, the so-called public interest provisions of broadcasting are being set aside for capitalistic, you know, motivation of a more efficient market. The company that has the most resources should get to determine how it wants to run its business.
Well, some who are in favor of the move in terms of ownership say, well, these modest media consolidations allow economies of scale, and as these companies, radio, newspapers, local television, are threatened because their ad revenues are being gobbled up by others like Facebook and Google and the like, that this just gives them a better competitive footing. Do you think that argument makes sense?
That argument, I think, made sense 5 years ago, but what's actually happening in practice, you know, is that a lot of the news will be generated by reporters who don't live in the market. In other words, it's basically a hub-and-spoke system where if you, say, for discussion's sake, Sinclair, it will have its graphics. It could have anchors in Florida reporting on news in Hartford. As a way to capture efficiencies, which is a way to increase their profit margin. So it's not that, you know, they can sort of daisy chain national advertisers, because you could do that already. It's just that they could save a lot of money by having one anchor serve four or five different markets instead of having an anchor local to each market delivering the news. So the scale works for the corporate side. It doesn't work for the news side, and news is a different sort of business. It's not in the widget business. It's locally oriented. Things that are important locally, you know, have to be discussed by people who know the locality. And the sort of hub-and-spoke system, the centralization of things like graphics and anchoring, et cetera, really don't work in developing a local presence and a local sense of what's important.
We're talking about eating up and gobbling up various media resources in a community. And before we get into the net neutrality issue, I do want to ask about some of the things that we've seen recently. You've got Disney buying up a big piece of 21st Century Fox. You've got AT&T and Time Warner trying to court each other. You've got Verizon bulking up, scoring these NFL streaming rights. You look at all these things, Amazon toying with a free TV service. I mean, we're talking about large behemoths gobbling up other behemoths here. What do you see this all leading to?
Well, this just shows that the power of the technology companies in terms of their cash is rippling throughout the media ecosystem. So Disney, in response to Amazon and Netflix, has to buy 21st Century Fox to have a chance at developing content that people want to see. So to me, it's going to be the technology companies versus traditional media companies, you know, in the race for eyeballs. And it really will be a race that's tremendously truncated from what it had been. There will only be a handful of mega corporations, you know, dictating pretty much our cultural tastes and our cultural products. And that would be Netflix, Amazon, Google's going to enter it, Apple's into it, you know, and the traditional NBC, CBS, ABC, Disney, and AT&T now, with they own DirecTV, they're going to own Time Warner. Verizon owns Yahoo and the remnants of whatever AOL is. So there's just a lot of a concentration going on, and we're going to get down to about 10 to 12 companies that will be providing all of our professional content. And the interesting thing about this, Larry, is that they're not necessarily competing against each other. They're competing against content created by consumers through YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Individuals are going toe-to-toe with these massive companies with their sort of sensibility, the cost and low-cost production that people will go to see. So all this money is being invested in traditional media sort of structures and frameworks, like, you know, TV dramas, movies, sporting rights to sporting events and so on. But the eyeballs tend to be going more and more to sort of amateur content, just goofing around stuff that people share on Facebook, Twitter, and other social media. So it is there's no middle here anymore. There's this amateur stuff that's pretty wild and crazy, and then there's the professional stuff, which is getting extraordinarily expensive to make, and so economies of scale matter at that level.
Well, you raised the issue of Netflix, and they seem to come into every conversation. So let's bring them into this whole conversation that we're going to have and focus most of our time on now, and that is net neutrality. And for those people who don't understand the concept to begin with, we didn't have it for years, then we've had it for the last couple of years. And what's been the difference, and what do you think will happen now that, again, it has been struck by the FCC?
Well, net neutrality, you know, started with the birth of the internet, and that all content would travel along the routes without any sort of favoritism. It wasn't an unspoken agreement that whoever was your internet provider would provide you the same chance to see all content available online without favoring big companies or bigger websites for smaller websites. All traffic was considered equal.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was codified into FCC regulation. And now that regulation of net neutrality has been reversed by the current lineup of FCC commissioners. So net neutrality doesn't exist. So companies like Comcast, Verizon, any internet service provider, can actually start charging different rates for carrying different sorts of content.
So do we begin to look as if we're, again, going back into a cable bundle? Is that what you're looking at?
Well, it could be. You know, it could very well be, but I don't think it's going to work that way necessarily, where customers will be paying with a little more to get quicker access to Facebook, a little more to get quicker access to Twitter. I think the sites and the apps like Facebook and Twitter will be paying the internet service providers to give them privileges to get to people faster. So I don't think people will see suddenly this bouquet of choices about what websites to go, they can see and they cannot see at what speed. I think that certain companies will be paying internet service providers a fee so that their traffic is privileged, and the consumer will see better performance from those sites in terms of speed and loading of video and graphics and so on. And that's dangerous because it means that you're paying to play. And although the consumer may not be paying more, the consumer experience will be variable and uneven, which defeats the first principle of the internet, and that is all content is equal.
And also, don't you think they're going to get much more aggressive in terms of the way that they're trying to sell our names or our various interests to others, and we are then going to be deluged with more requests, or they're going to try to sell us boosts of all of our posts or whatever it may be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a total marketplace, because when we log on, we surrender our identity, and we surrender any privacy. Everything we do is tracked, and it can be packaged and monetized in some way, shape, or form. You know, in fact, I don't know if you're aware of this, but, you know, there was a hack. Not really a hack. The company just left the stuff wide open for anyone to take, so there's a probability that the 123 million people had their personal information stolen, you know, in the sense that this one company left a way for anyone to download its database without any, sort of security precautions. So what what websites you went to, what you bought, you did it.
But we see so much of this going on.
Yeah.
And so many people, the young people, they live their entire lives, Professor, online. And so they just look at this and they shrug. I mean, what can you do at this point?
Well, you can't do anything except, understand that what you do online will be packaged and sold as a commodity to advertisers, to political parties, perhaps to foreign governments wishing to influence your choice of candidates in an election, because our lives are now filtered through online means, and that means what we think, what we like, what we dislike, what we buy, all creates a very specific and unique identity, and that's one that can be packaged and sold for various reasons. It's like when you now, you know, just go online, you'll see ads for stuff that you might have looked at on another website a week ago or an hour before. And that's how it works. It's just algorithms are running this sort of thing, and they're becoming more and more sophisticated. And once you put machine learning in place, artificial intelligence, a layer of that on here, it'll have a certain predictive power that will actually lead you to choices that you don't know you made based on your past preferences. So there's all sorts of sophisticated marketing, advertising, and political machinations about to happen, you know, online, and there's nothing we could do about it unless we just simply withdraw from the space, and I don't see that happening.
Now, a lot of people are worried that it's going to slow down various elements that they go to on the Internet. I want to ask you, I mean, if in fact that's not necessarily going to be the case, is it really video that we're talking about here taking up all this bandwidth? In other words, if I wanted to start up, as we just did, this podcast, America Trends, is there any chance that that information could be slowed down? It's only audio. It doesn't take up a lot of room. I mean, what are you looking at as being the impacts potentially? And, you know, people either having to pay more companies or individuals if they did bundle. Is it all about video? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, a lot of the traffic is Netflix online, as it is now. But I don't think, you know, folks who are putting up a video have much to worry about at this point. However, in a few years, when a business model evolves and is fully developed, you could be asked to pay more to get your video out a little quicker than somebody else's. You could be asked to take part in a marketing agreement where ads would pre-roll on your video, and the revenue from those ads will be shared with the ISP. It's just, and the reason I think there's a delay is because there really isn't a business model in place. I mean, ISPs in the past have been caught throttling content. By that, I mean slowing content down. These were mainly sites that dealt with massive amounts of downloads, mm-hmm. like BitTorrent, which downloaded pirated movies and pirated music cuts and that sort of thing. ISPs have throttled that because it takes up their bandwidth. Now I think you'll see some throttling legally for some sites that, unless they pay the ISP, that do pump out a lot of video, a lot of bandwidth-heavy content like video, full-length films, live sporting events, and so on and so forth. It makes sense because, I mean, these companies, particularly a company like AT&T, which is investing billions of dollars. AT&T spent $16 billion in 2016, you know, upgrading systems, fiber, and whatnot to improve and enhance performance of its products. You know, it needs to recoup that investment, and one of the ways it can recoup that investment is charging content providers or websites for quicker access to customers, and the end of net neutrality allows them to create that revenue stream now.
What about increased competition in the ways that you and I connect to the Internet? Right now, many of us only have one or two choices at most. Is this potentially going to lead to more of this new technology, 5G or satellite-based broadband? Are we going to see a lot more investment? Is that one of the things that they, by this ruling, are trying to encourage?
Yeah, I think what they're trying to encourage is an ideology, the ideology of the free market, unencumbered by regulations of any kind. And as you get more and more bandwidth opened with more and more technological innovation, 5G and so forth, you know, the argument that bandwidth is a restrictive good or a limited good becomes less and less valid. But nevertheless, it is, whether we want to believe it or not, a public utility, a common carrier. Mm-hmm. And so there needs to be some sort of regulatory apparatus to keep one company from being the one ISP for an entire region, for example, and able to extract exorbitant fees for access to the network. You know, so I do think that, you know, there will be a business model evolving. There will be competition, you know, particularly with mobile providers, you know, for your internet business. But it won't be as robust as it was, say, a generation ago when you could have mom and pop ISPs competing against AT&T and others, because of that sense that every packet, every little piece of information that travels on the internet is equal to every other packet produced by anybody else. So I do think that there will be changes. I just don't know what will happen. Although there is a chance that municipalities and even perhaps states will become ISPs in a way to guarantee access at reasonable cost to customers. In many ways, like in Wallingford, Connecticut, electricity is provided by the municipality. You may be seeing a move by municipalities and states to become ISPs against, I'm sure, opposition from the major companies, but they will then serve as a regulated space where content will flow freely or equally, and people will pay a reasonable price for that.
Do you see any possibility that there's a silver lining in this, that the FCC plan now restores power to police the Internet to the Federal Trade Commission? They were on the beat, and they were supposedly a pretty good cop as it relates to the Internet in the past, and now it all reverts back to them.
I don't know. I think right now, under the Trump administration, any sort of government agency competence and decision to wield regulatory authority is open to question. We're seeing it in different agencies, the EPA. We're seeing it in the financial regulatory regime. You can't say that the Federal Trade Commission is going to be the good cop or will be a cop or even a competent cop until we get a better sense of what this administration really wants to do as a governing entity. The evidence so far shows it wants to have a light hand in everything. It won the election, that's its right, and that's its privilege. There's no reason to think the FTC is going to start cracking down on anybody because of that.
Well, in the past, to your point, they did defend the rights of municipalities to provide broadband in the past, and they were ones who were actually in support of net neutrality, the FTC. But as you say, we don't know under whose leadership they are today and how they'll react. Let me ask you another concern that people have. And when we look at Comcast, they're not only my cable provider and many people who are listening to this, but they also own NBC. And let's take it to another place. They own MSNBC. Now, could they slow down Fox and CNN in favor of MSNBC?
They could very well do that, but they would run the risk of alienating customers. So under the FCC's new paradigm, the customer will be almost the policing agency. In other words, if there's some sort of problem, getting access to Fox News' website, and Comcast is the provider, there will be a mechanism to complain about it. But the number one mechanism is to cancel their subscription and cut the cord, which millions of people are doing every month. So it's not in Comcast's best interest to do that sort of thing with anything through their cable television subsidiary or through their internet service provider division. It's not in their interest to alienate customers. It is in their interest to grow revenue from that, so they could charge Fox some money to make sure it carries free and clear, to the customer. I mean, it's the same thing with AT&T, which will soon own Time Warner, which owns CNN and HBO. You don't want to really alienate your customers at all. But there are ways you can extract revenue from it, and this ruling by the FCC allows them to extract some revenue, and I suspect that they will.
When we looked at net neutrality and how it worked, at least in the last couple of years under the Obama administration, which supported it, there was such a thing called zero rate, which allowed certain content services to travel outside of a data plan that you might have. Was that an unfair advantage even within the context of net neutrality? And what happens to this notion of zero rate for things like music streaming services?
Well, that's all open for debate now, Larry. This is a new frontier of media. I mean, we have no idea what's going to happen, who's going to get transit, frictionless transit, who's going to have some friction in terms of a toll. to get their stuff out there. This is all new, and I just think it's going to take some time for business models to develop, and so on and so forth, to determine, how we will get content, through the internet over the next generation. I mean, the internet, as an entity itself, is changing as more and more people consume content, through their phone, and the phone becomes the gateway, to the internet. There's still some, regulatory debate going on, in that space. But we do know that space is very limited to only a handful of carriers. And although there are different technologies and different speeds and different, methods of accessing content through apps on your smartphone, we don't know how the major companies like Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, et cetera, are going to handle the regulatory room that they've now been given, by the FCC and the Trump administration.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All so right. Well, that sure dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And stay in touch with us on both Facebook and Twitter at Trends Podcast. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
That's right, where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is.
Well,
well, you can
direct message us
at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two, and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
Let me just ask you to comment. Joel Espeline, he's a senior advisor at Diffusion Group, and they forecast the future of TV and video. He said the future is a wider variety of broadband and cellular plans offering you faster access to particular services if you're willing to pay more. If you can't pay, you might still get fast access to services that can pay to reach you, while the remainder of your broadband streams are subject to an annoying data cap. Is that something you could envision?
Yeah, I could see that happens already, in many respects. So that's, certainly in the cards for the future. And that's, it's going to be a pay-to-play environment. The question is, how much are you willing to pay, and how much are the companies who distribute content willing to pay, to the providers to get their stuff in front of as many eyeballs as efficiently and as frictionless as possible. But there's also, self-defeating components to that, so self-policing components to that, and that companies are going to want to get their material to as many people as possible in the most efficient way, and these companies with scale like Netflix have the muscle to compel ISPs and phone carriers to make sure that happens without paying exorbitant rates to do so. And any rate, and it will be passed along to the customer. In the interest of Netflix, it'll make sure that rate is as low as possible so it won't lose subscribers.
So this could be another race of mutually assured destruction if some of these companies begin to play games and just demand, in a sense, that other companies begin to counter their moves.
Yeah, and what it's going to be for the consumer, is some confusion. And that's the last thing any media company or any content company wants, a confused customer, because they can walk away from this stuff. And they have walked away from it. I mean, just look at the example of ESPN. You know, the customer's desire for sports content changed, and ESPN lost over 10% of its subscribers virtually overnight. Customers have choices even outside of the infrastructure, you know, of traditional content companies. And so they'll just leave. And if that happens, everybody loses. So I think there'll come a point of equilibrium where the business model will say the market will bear X amount of cost for Y content. And that's what it will settle on. And that will be a low, by its nature, has to be a low price point in order for the all the ISP and the content companies, the mobile carriers, some of which are all the same, to, to find. I mean, AT&T with DirecTV, it's AT&T Mobility. They'll soon own HBO and CNN. You know, it's like, well,
it's hard to keep up without a scorecard.
It's hard to keep up without a scorecard. And they're in the business to make money and not alienate customers. And even if the customer has one other choice, that customer has a choice, and that customer will leave. So it's not in the interests of these companies, to throttle back on content in such a way where it interferes with the customer experience. It's not in their interest of these companies to go to war with each other. I'll just throw another example out there. When Comcast and the YES Network could not agree, the YES Network, which has the rights to the Yankees, was pulled off Comcast cable for an entire baseball season. Comcast, didn't lose as many customers as it thought it was going to lose because people had a choice. They could just listen to the game on the radio. And that showed both YES and Comcast that people don't care as much about your stuff as you're charging, as much as you think they do. If it disappears, they'll always find something else to do. That's the nature of things. So they have to be very cautious and very careful about how they price this new model where they can throttle back content, they can slow down content, or they can accelerate it for certain companies. They just have to be careful because people will walk away. And they've proven that even if they don't walk away necessarily from one tier, they'll just go watch something else, or they'll do something else.
Well, I'm glad people didn't do something else and they stayed and listened to all of your really important comments about net neutrality. And I think you put it in a way, Rich Hanley, that people can understand because it's a rather complex, issue. But thank you for breaking it down for us today on America Trends.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of America Trends.